Okay, whoops. Time for this.
Keeping up to date with Beady the Wonder Horse, Dudley, Lola, Angel, Buster, Tarker, Misty, Jess, Fizzburn, and other animals on their tour of the countryside, it's Minty Steed on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
I should say quite right too. I didn't know. It's the excitement of yesterday's book launch obviously getting to me. Minty, good morning. Welcome along formally to the programme. Before we go into the country shows and various other bits and pieces, got to ask, are all the Southside and Midweek Drive Morning Edition Siren FM doggies, are they all microchipped or will they be microchipped by 2016?
I would say so, but knowing what the terriers, etc., are like and how territorial they are, you know, I think we'll leave that one to Stuart to sort that one out.
Exactly.
After all, they'll know the sea vet, they think like him, and that should prove interesting.
Well, precisely so. That's important. Okay, quickly around the table. Stephanie, you're quite a rural lass, are you not?
I am indeed, yeah. I live in a little village not in Derby, just outside of it. Very interested about this fair.
Very excited about the competition we're running for the Yorkshire Game Fair and several other game fairs we're actually running. We'll be talking about with Minty in a few moments. Grace, Lincolnshire lass, Lincolnshire showing things appeal to your good self? Would you sort of say, yeah, I quite like matters rural?
Yeah, I quite like a bit of countryside.
Great, I like that, very good. And Ed, of course, we know. From the joys of the south to the north again, and fantastic stuff. So.
And I've never won a competition, not that I can enter this one, but I'm interested in it because I've never won anything.
I know, it's very exciting. The chance to actually win tickets for the upcoming Yorkshire Game Fair, which we'll pull the details out of. Before we actually reveal that, I know, Minty, you wanted to talk a little bit about the West Country Game Fair, which comes up, of course, on March the 9th and March the 10th, Royal Bath West Showground. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. It's on the Shep and Mallet Showground, and it's going to be quite a good start for that area of the country on the Game and Country Fair circuit. And Paddy of the Corsin crew, they will be running all the lurch and terrier racing, and they'll be putting on all the terrier and all the lurch events over the 2 days. And they do it very well indeed, so it should be a good competition, plenty of good fair play, and you take your chance and have a go. And so we're hoping that we're going to take Dash down with us, and Dash is a good racing terrier and she's the mother of the pups, so we shall see what happens. Although of course last time Dash was racing, she did take hold of the racing organisers over trousers, the waterproof ones, and hung on. Coffee and Clack had joined in, and he had to try to walk off the shoring area in order to get them off his trousers.
You see, you don't get that challenge with Mo Farah, do you?
I mean,
you don't get Mo Farah suddenly grabbing hold of the judge's trousers and refusing to let go.
No.
Just in case you are looking for the countdown to the Yorkshire Game for 26th and 27th of May, 107 days, 22 hours, 53 minutes. Okay, so I mean, people might be sort of concerned about that. Do not give the location away, Minty, because the competition that we'll be running for this will be whereabouts in Yorkshire is the Yorkshire Game Fair.
Mm-hmm. You know? Whereabouts in Yorkshire? Well, you've got to guess it, and I'll give two sort of clues.
Ooh.
It's never been used before for a game fair, and it has a great association to not only the history of this country, but the parliament of this country.
Well, does that help, Grace? I mean, not that you can enter.
I have no idea.
it's a great association with this country, the parliament of this country. Never been held here before. Yorkshire Game Fair. There we are. Okay. If you want to actually enter that, send it to our Midweek Drive official address, info@southsideradio.com. That's info@southsideradio.com. You could send it to siren@studioonline.co.uk as well, but you'd be info@southsideradio.com. We'll pick them up as the things proceed. Closing date for that. Ed, when should we have the closing date? A week from now? 2 weeks from now?
Should we say 2 weeks from now?
Is that
fair?
That's a good extension, I think. Yeah, exactly. We'll go for 14 days, which will be the 21st of February. Which is good, because next week we'll be all het up with our Valentine's Day special. The massacre, of course, in case you're thinking various other bits and pieces of that. Yes, this time, Minty's slot, we'll be going off to Los Angeles and rearranging all sorts of things. Okay, that's the Yorkshire Game Fair. Talked about the West Country Game Fair. You'd also like to talk about something else which is new, which is the Oxford Game Fair.
That's correct. There's a new one. It's a short notice, so we're looking forward to this one. It's in Buscombe Park, and Oxfordshire, April 27th and 28th, and this one is supported by the Shooting and Conservation Society, and it's very, very much emphasising on people can join in all sorts of things to try it out and sample it and see what they think to it and join in the entertainments, not only watching but participating in the various entertainments and fun and games. So we think it'll be a good one, and we shall be there and throwing in our lot with anything and everything that any of the Southside FM team can have a go at.
Well, exactly so. Now, Stephanie, share with us your experience as a game fair. Why, when we talk about this, you say, oh, this is quite exciting because that's what I like, basically. So, because you're relatively new to the whole team, it's just your second show. What's the key things are you looking to about game fair? What is it that you like about the whole thing?
Well, the ones that I've been to back home, they're not specifically game fair, but just, you know, within the country. And
home, of course, being Peak District, Derbyshire.
But there's a lot of equestrian events. I did notice that there was more dog shows going on with the Yorkshire Game Fair. Is that a popular event for you?
Definitely. It's very popular with the public. And not forgetting, of course, you see, they do separate off the dog show in the main from the Terry and the Lurchers, which is very intensive about the actuality of the type. And they have to be judged on, could they? They don't necessarily have to be a working terrier or a working lurcher, but they have to be very much sure they could do the job if they're required to do it, whereby your dog show is very much on how the judge thinks and the type of animal that catches their eye. So you've got just as good a chance as anyone in any of the events when it comes to those.
Ed, you were part of the show which will be broadcast. Probably should start on St David's Day here on the Siren 107.3 FM with the Chief Executive Officers of the Newark and Nottinghamshire Agricultural Society, Adrian Johnston, and, of course, our very own Lincolnshire Director of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, Jane Southall. Future of the County Show, we don't want to give too much away about that, but are you looking forward to this summer, as well as obviously getting your MA and all the rest of it, so these are sorted out in community radio at the University of Lincoln, he says, shameless plug there. Are you looking forward to some of these location reports? Because you went to the Lincolnshire Show a good few years ago, but this is a whole new field for you. No pun intended.
Yeah. I mean, from what Adrian and Jane both said, I think there's a lot to be said for going along if you haven't been for a while. To see what's on offer there. I'm looking forward to it.
As a first year, obviously, it's a whole new world for yourself. But you're at Lincolnshire last, aren't you?
No, I'm actually from Derby.
Really?
So, yeah.
Both of you?
Isn't that amazing? Mm. You wait years for another Derbyshire girl to actually come on board and suddenly they come
two
like
in the same room.
It's amazing.
Never seen that before.
Strange but true. So again, with respect to countryside scenarios, will you be joining us on the team, etc.? And working there?
I don't see why not. Like, we have a lot of farmers markets back home and they're really good, but I've never seen like a dog event. So,
never seen a dog event.
Never seen a dog
Grace,
event.
Grace, really, it's going to be a whole new world, as Mindy will attest.
No, it is. It's a whole new world. And the one thing I would like to say for anyone listening in, if you go to agricultural shows, then you see, if I could sort of say, formal, i.e. you exhibit the animals in the ring, they're judged correctly, they've done, everything is done, you know, formally. And then sometimes, after the end of all the more formal competitions, they maybe have a gymkhana or something of that nature, whereby, and of course it's serious business because the value of your stock goes very much on what it wins and how it achieves being shown. But the game and country fairs, although equally, we do take it very seriously when we're actually competing, but informal. Therefore, the public can join in things and you can find yourself in the ring and doing all sorts of things and really enjoying themselves. And it's a less sort of, professional atmosphere. I don't mean it isn't professional because we're very professional what we do, but it's more relaxed. It's a bit like whether you just go to dine as you are or whether you're dressed for dinner, you know. Put it that way.
And as you're aware, we still need to coordinate the equine gymnastics with some of our colleagues. Rebecca, of course,
is
looking to do that. So
yes. And our equine team is forever growing. Chinook is joining our team soon. There's a spotted 3-year-old, 14-2, and he has spots all over. And he will also be joining in that Johnny Come Lately, the would-be engineer of the miniature horse world, who is a cream with spots on. His half brother is going to join the team, So, and he used to all be round with Fox on his hindquarters. So in a year or two's time, when I'm old enough, or we should frame them for the scurry, that's the pairs of ponies that zigzag in and out of the cones, and of course they have to have a name other than the pedigree names when they compete in that. So I've decided, as he is cream with spots, strawberry roan, I'm going to call them strawberry and cream.
I like that. I think we got the gist of it. The line was dropping slightly. It's not the sort of perfect line at this particular area, but we're getting there.
Yes, strawberry and cream.
And before anybody actually sends in an email or wants to actually check things out via the webcam, studio at sirenonline.co.uk, no, none of our midweek drive team actually have cream-coloured spots, as far as I'm aware, in any sort of parts of our anatomy. And we're not going to be going to check that out either. So, you know.
No. We could do spot the spot, though, couldn't we?
We could, but we won't, Minty. Okay, yes. I mean, there are certain things I have to say. You know, it's not going to happen. You know, spot the spot. Oh, I don't know.
No, I don't know. I mean, it could set the listenership up enormously,
okay.
Couldn't it?
All right. So,
a few more things to mention, just quickly, is that over the situation everybody knows about meat in various forms of late, is that for anyone, now I'm a vegetarian, I've been naturally from the age of about, well, as soon as I get my own decision when I was about 2 years old, just because I've never been inclined towards eating such as pork, lamb, you know, that type of food, never been my want, but I've never been against people who wish to eat such, but when people are now maybe a bit wondering, what can I buy? What can I trust? Where do I go? If you go to the Game and Country Fairs, there are all the demonstrations about what to do with game. And there's one thing about game, it lives naturally, it breeds naturally, it thrives naturally, and then when you eat it, you know what it is. You can hardly say it's something else. It would be well worthwhile if people are thinking, I still wish to eat meat of some kind, or poultry of some kind. Well, if you go to the Game and Country Fairs, you can learn all about it, and it is not an unknown one. Someone just shows you how best to prepare game, when to use it, and how to. At least you know what it is.
Could be ideal for, you know, another undergraduate routine, and we'll cross-reference that with William Sitwell and the Get Britain Cooking campaign.
I think so.
Okay, that's, I mean, Grace, are you vegetarian, or do you think anything, you know?
I'm a meat lover, really.
Okay.
I don't think I'd be able to live without meat.
Yeah.
So.
Well, technically you could, but I know where you're coming from.
I don't think I'd want to.
There we are, exactly. And Steph?
Yeah, I am a meat eater, although I will say I have experienced this problem with these burgers, and it does make me feel slightly queasy because I do like horses, and they're more of a pet to me than something that's bred for food.
You wouldn't want to eat them, exactly. This is the whole thing.
Situation.
Ed? I'm kind of with you, Minty. I eat a bit of chicken, but yeah. I could give it up easily.
I might try, actually. Yes.
Next year.
And if you felt you couldn't completely give up eating a poultry, at least if you knew the creature you're eating has had a perfectly natural life, and one minute's flying around, the next minute it's gone and it doesn't even know what happened to it, and you do know what it is, and it's clean and healthy, and it isn't, we don't know how it's been raised or anything, it makes it much more easier to be able to enjoy it for as long as you feel you can't remove yourself from poultry, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can trust it more, but I think it doesn't make me feel less guilty, actually.
No, I know, but we're talking about some of the, like, demi veg and the sort of scissoring on the gatepost,
and
just not sure which way to cross.
Just want to again add a rider that, as far as any sort of crazy listener might be concerned, no, the midweek drive team are not to be eaten at all, you know.
We don't advocate that. Put on show at all the outdoor events,
so
people to come up and see you and
talk
to you.
Exactly, yeah. Sign all the rest of them.
No, we don't eat the exhibit.
We do precisely so. And finally, just a reminder that as far as the Yorkshire Game Fair is concerned, 107 days, 22 hours, 49 minutes. So there we are. It seems to have gone so quickly already. Amazing for that. The question, of course, is whereabouts in the country is the Yorkshire Game Fair hole? We need being held this year. We need a precise location. Coming up, we'll be talking Richard III. Yes, inevitably, Richard Fitzwilliams talking about his namesake, and a whole range of things under the Leicester car park, plus more. Last two questions for Minty, please. Ed.
Minty, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Definitely, especially over the aspect of the difference between the agricultural and the game fairs, etc. Yes, it's been most useful, and I think we've put a lot of good knowledge over to people now. and hope they'll go to the events and not only see us, but see everything there is there.
Fascinating and lovely to talk to you again. Can we do the same next week, please?
Most certainly, which I'll be mentioning the Robin Hood event and the follow-up on the Scottish Game event and many more other things besides. And Patchwork Pooch's outfits they've made with Siren FM and Southside Radio all over them.
Amazing. Yeah, we now actually have this ad, this radio station, the radio service, branded on dogs. It's fantastic. It's a station that dogs love to actually wear. You know,
they love
that other radio stations. You don't get that on BBC National Radio
1. Anywhere in the world they have that. Exactly. They have their doggy jackets. Not just wear dog jackets, they wear dog jackets with Siren FM and broadcasting all over them, including the logos.
I think that's quite enough of Phil Collins. And indeed, Conor Maynard with Animal in all manner of ways. OK, we have a brief reminder, of course, of this traffic incident. Ed?
Queuing traffic currently. A15, it's north of Cambie Corner in a place called Snitterby. The A15 is that blocked there. Queuing traffic both directions. It's between the Cliff Road Junction and the Curtain Road Junction, which is the B1205. There's a diversion in operation around the Curtain Lindsay area. So A15 north of Lincoln, Cliff Road Junction to the Curtain Road Junction, queuing traffic because of a serious accident earlier this morning.
From international who's who to CNN, from film criticism to royalty, from South Africa to London, and now to the midweek drive on Siren FM, it's Richard Fitzwilliams.
It is, yes, and he doesn't normally follow a piece of traffic information unless, of course, it's vitally important traffic information, despite the fact that I think certainly the remaining offspring of Richard III, should they be tracked down, have got one heck of a car parking charge to actually pay. Good morning, Richard. How are we?
Yes, they have. I mean, I've been following it with enormous interest because, obviously, I think this extraordinary discovery that the remains of a king of England should be discovered in a municipal car park on the site, apparently, of Greyfriars Church, where finally his body, after suffering numerous humiliations, was buried after Bosworth in 1485. Quite extraordinary and very, very interesting.
I just have to point out that Jeff Thompson has mentioned us on Twitter. He's actually reminded people that the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, 8 through 10am, Siren 107.3 FM in Lincoln, is a link to a live webcam, so there we are. Tune in. Thank you, Jeff. That's very nice of him, wasn't it? You know, it's cross-promotion, cross-branding. You know, you can actually physically see Grace and and Stephanie and Ed and the back of my head, if you're really sort of unfortunate. Still be moving in all sorts of ways, basically. Richard, sorry, just a little bit of branding there. So, Grace, what do you think about this whole Richard III thing? I mean, as a lass from Derbyshire, you're possibly best suited to be the kind of neutral arbiter in terms of should he go to York, which is apparently where historians say that's where he wanted to be buried, or should he stay with Leicester because they've got the National Space Centre? Why shouldn't they have Bosworth Field and, obviously, King Richard III's remains as well?
Well, I think it's, like, pretty interesting because it is, like, a King of England. I'd probably send him up to York.
Is the great Stephanie? York,
well, I think there's people with a lot better brains than me on this.
Oh
subject,
no, that's you see, you can't now. Come on, you know, after the last essay you produced, come on now, you know, let's work on this.
We'll go for York, prehistoric, York, nice place.
York, yeah. Ed,
I think this should be the start of a trend to demolish car parks all over the world just to see what's underneath them.
Nice.
Actually, because I think we may get a few surprises.
See where you're coming from. What's your own views, Richard? I mean, I know that you're very much in the camp of saying he was wronged by Shakespeare.
I would point out, Alex, that you just jumped the gun. You see, you're doing a bit of stirring because you haven't asked me, and you've now presumed to know what I was about to say.
I see.
Really just wanted a bit of fun.
Bit of tabloid headline making, that's all.
Yes, I know, I gathered that it was. I mean, firstly, it seems to me that it's interesting in front of me. I've got what Richard III is supposed to have looked like. And what's interesting also is that those who support his reputation, such as it is, have always claimed that the Tudors had invented this misshapen character, which obviously in Shakespeare was absolutely monstrously deformed. It does appear that he was a hunchback. It's extremely interesting. Firstly, where should he be buried? Well, I mean, there were some mischievous articles yesterday, including one by Andrew Roberts in the Daily Mail, that were advocating a state funeral. I really think we ought to calm down a bit.
Really?
In Leicester, well...
Would that be taking our kind of obsession with the past in Britain just a stitch too far, that we have a state funeral?
More than one stitch. Yeah. I mean, it's an excuse for an article, and in the excuse, a historian will wade in where there's a controversy. There are several historians. I mean, I think David Stark is probably right. It does seem to me that when we're looking at Richard, we've got to remember a couple of things. The link with York is, in fact, because he was the governor of the north and warden of the marshes at one time. I mean, he only reigned for 2 years. He was actually killed in battle, fighting bravely. No question, he was a brave soldier at the age of 32.
Yeah.
And he was popular in the north. He was found in Leicester. It's been decided Leicester Cathedral is the likely... very old place, but it's all a bit of fun to stir up.
What coming to,
and that is, did he or did he not murder the princes in the tower?
Richard, I'm still recovering, as I'm sure many of my historical colleagues would be, from that statement you just made about any excuse for an article, and a historian will wade in.
They will.
Good heavens.
Well, I mean, this was a very good example yesterday, because Andrew Roberts usually writes a certain amount of sense stuff anyway that's controversial and readable. This was...
arrant nonsense, it would seem.
Well, I mean, obviously, it doesn't have anything of the kind.
Before we get to your views, Richard, let's do the straw poll scenario. Guilty or innocent, what do you think, Ed Wellman? Did he kill the princes? Did he off them? Or has he just been much maligned by the subsequent Tudor organisations?
I would like to give him the benefit of the doubt, so I say innocent.
Innocent. Stephanie, guilty or innocent?
Oh, I think I need a history lesson, to be honest.
You can't sit on the fence, one way or the other.
No, I do.
That's never stopped many historians from writing arrant nonsense articles.
But I guess it's innocent till proven guilty. That's
clever.
What we go within modern
Grace?
Oh, I'd say guilty. Chop off his head and
all that.
Kind lesson.
So, would you like to present some evidence, given that we've reversed the practice of justice then, given you our verdict, before we've even got the Richard Fitzwilliam's input onto the whole thing?
Well, my feeling on this is, let me take you on a journey. That journey was go to the Bloody Tower, no connection actually with the princes, but when I was doing some research for a broadcast when the Olympic flame was about to come to London, as you know, it was received at the Tower, I went to the Bloody Tower, where there is an exhibition which asks this precise question. There's a little histories. We know that the princes were declared illegitimate by Richard, and we also know that they weren't seen again. We know that he didn't make statements regarding what had happened to them, and we also know that it is probable that his successor, Henry, absolutely ruthless, might very well have done away with them. But that, of course, is not the point. Let's just look at the evidence. Richard was the brother of the late King Edward IV. Edward V and his brother were declared illegitimate by Richard. Interred in the Tower, we know very well that after the summer of 1483, no one subsequently saw them. Now, you can vote in three ways. You can vote that Richard murdered them. You could vote that somebody else, perhaps the Duke of Buckingham, someone acting on... believing on his own behalf or on Richard's behalf or some unknown person murdered them, or that Henry Tudor murdered them. And
Richard, one more, please. You know, alien abduction. That's my line. Alien abduction, extraterrestrials. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
There is always that, and what's quite interesting is how evenly the vote was split, with the majority, 80,000, by the way, voted. These were people, you could push buttons, tourists also, of course, everyone visiting the Tower most are tourists. 80,000 believed Richard, and 60,000 roughly for the other two. So this was a vote that was slightly biased. The reason I nearly didn't vote, and I voted for Richard, because as I say, evidence points to the fact that when they vanish, when you've declared them illegitimate and you've actually imprisoned them, and of course you've declared yourself or subsequently been crowned yourself, he's the obvious guilty party. But above the voting booths, in the same room, was a clip from Laurence Olivier's Richard III, where he...
No!
Yes, that's prejudicing the witness.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like going into your to exercise your majority in a voting routine and having party political broadcasts. I mean, you're not, on the day itself, you can't do that.
That's what I felt. So, whereas they've got interesting little histories in the room, you've got Richard Smothering Tyrrell, who's the supposed murderer and gets Dighton and Forrest to smother the princes, with the pillow actually filmed. So that does, I think, cast...
I think a slight bias there, really?
A lot of bias, but of course when it comes to Richard, you see, it's very, very lively. I read a book called A Daughter of Time by Josephine Tay, where a detective investigates what actually happened, and or supposed to have happened, and in fact there was a television trial, which I didn't see, where Richard was acquitted, because there is no actual evidence that links him to the actual murder, and all we know in the 17th century is that they did discover in the White Tower the bones of two, what turned out to be certainly persons of a similar age that was ascertained in the 1930s to the princes, and probably they are the princes, but we don't know, and the reluctance of the royal family to open the grave, well, in fact they were interred in Westminster Abbey, where it states they were murdered by perfidious Richard, the reluctance to open up the DNA testing is rather obvious. But what you have with Richard, there's no doubt at Bosworth, a lot of his army, including Stanley's forces, didn't fight for him. And one of the reasons for this may well have been that there were rumours at the time, and that has been proven by historians, before the maligning by the Tudors, before Shakespeare and Sir Thomas More, before the vision of some Machiavellian humpbacked horror whose mind was as twisted as his actions and all the rest of it, and as his body and all the rest of it. At the time, there were obviously rumours as to what had happened to the princes who had unquestionably, as I say, been interred in the Tower by Richard. And I think his subsequent reputation, and he founded the College of Arms, he founded the Court of Requests, he introduced bail, he was a brave soldier, there's no doubt he fought valiantly at Bosworth, but in a hopeless cause, and half his army deserted him.
But it's, I mean, as people have actually said, you know, in a world where JFK, Martin Luther King and others were philanderers, you know, Chris Huhne actually sort of gets some points put on of different license, etc. And he's just, we live in a different time. I still think my alien abduction theory is worth considering.
Now, well, alien abduction is something that I think you should write to the governor of the Tower, Lord Dunham, and suggest that the people could vote for this gives four options.
Yeah, precisely. That was the point, which is one of the reasons why I felt I couldn't vote, because they'd actually left a very crucial aspect out of the extraterrestrial intervention. But never mind.
Interesting, however, that an absolute triumph for those who found the remains, because this is rather extraordinary, and I mean, there's no doubt he should be given a proper burial, but having said that, let's not overdo it. And as for state funerals, anyone actually suggesting such a thing with a straight face should look at themselves in the mirror.
And consider those extraterrestrial alien abductions. Has that actually...
Aliens could, of course, attend at the state funeral. There could be a special...
They might already be here.
...of aliens.
Exactly. Grace, has that made you adjust? I mean, what we've actually just heard, any sort of reflection on your decision earlier? Sort of
I still think that he had the biggest motive, so...
Biggest motive, so it's
it
all...
It just seems unlikely that anyone but him would have ordered it or done it himself.
Okay. Stephanie?
Yes, we think I should read up more, definitely. Yeah, yeah. But like you said, he was acquitted, so that's what the law
says. It was a television trial. I didn't actually see it, but he was acquitted. This was an interesting
Okay,
fact.
And Ed?
I think this will do much for the tourist industry of Leicester.
Of course it
possibly
will. One
needs
of the things also is to look how ruthless the Tudors were. Well, the Richard's defenders have concentrated in looking at the character and actions of Henry VII. And there's no doubt that there are some extraordinary aspects to this, where, for example, Tyrrell, who's supposed to have been instrumental in murdering the princes, was indeed executed by Henry VII, but although Sir Thomas More alleged that he had confessed, the reason for his execution was another issue. So I think Henry, well, I believe Richard did it, or an agent of his did it. Henry certainly wasn't sorry, because of course his right to the throne
exactly stepped into place very, very neatly. That's a bizarre thing. However, that's what life is all concerned. I'm just throwing another piece of possible, you know, evidence into the theory. Isn't it interesting that our Leicestershire correspondent Tiffany Freeman goes off to Holland and in her absence they dig up the bones? I was going to mention that on the show yesterday, but I thought, no, she was trying so hard with her Dutch lessons, the term she's spending over there, it was pushing it a wee bit too further. But I don't worry not, Richard. I'll be sorting that out, ferreting that out of our Level 2 journalism student when we're next connected telephonically with her. Even she might be in Holland, different country. That doesn't excuse her from sort of this Leicester scenario of the Richard III discovery.
We also mentioned one thing about Richard III, and that is Shakespeare and others accused him of numerous murders he didn't commit. There's no doubt about that.
Well,
but I was highly entertained by Laurence Olivier's film. Olivier does slip in the early part, because of course he grossly maligns Richard with playing him as this
Quasimodo-esque character.
Oh, no doubt about it.
At least he didn't go into Debels, Debels, otherwise it would have been a completely different movie.
But he sneaks in the fact that this was the story is one of those legends, and that covers everything he did. It was a thoroughly colourful movie. And the theme, incidentally, Sir William Walton's music was also played, and I remember most movingly, I was at the occasion when Nelson Mandela in the 1990s addressed both Houses of Parliament, and when he'd at the end of his address and he was walking out, they played Walton's theme from Richard III.
But Richard,
the sty of this most bloody boar.
Would it have won a BAFTA? I don't know. You see the segue we actually did there. We've only got a few moments to actually go before we actually tease ahead, so I think
we
need to...
And Gillian McKellen's Richard III, a nod.
Okay.
On stage and on film. Yes, regarding the BAFTAs, it's going to be tremendously exciting, because the purpose of the BAFTAs, having moved before the Oscars in 2001, because it used to be the tag end of the award ceremony, I mean, what we've got is a completely international cast with a tremendous number of top stars. They're all coming.
I would say the odds are we'll see several close-ups of Stephen Fry during the whole production. You know, I think that's there. He'll be smirking to camera, doing various other things. We'll get sort of the... Will we be watching the BAFTA ceremony, Grace?
Yeah, I love seeing all, like, film stars.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Well, you won yourself, no? Just wave to camera. There we are. That's, hello there. Marvellous. Stephanie?
Definitely.
BAFTA, et cetera. Yeah. And Ed?
I intend to, yes.
Okay. I know Natalie Turkey sort of person. She'll sort of have her own sort of thoughts with this, but who would you say you'd like to, any particular award that you'd say best actor, best movie, etc., from your own point of view, Steph?
Oh, it's the whole event, isn't it?
The whole event.
The whole event.
Just soaking up the whole, everybody,
a child,
everybody's
yeah.
a winner. You
with
know?
Those glorious fashions, or at least I think we'll see a very high standard of fashion. I think the fashion of the Globes was quite what it could have been, but usually these days we don't get Bjork as a swan or something.
What was wrong with that, Richard?
Yeah, it was absolutely monstrous. No, we'll get an absolutely glorious ceremony, but what's so significant is it is one of the world's top three ceremonies, Oscars, BAFTAs and Globes, and we're celebrating an industry which is doing so tremendously well. I mean, the way our talents in so many fields are being recognised. Of course, the BAFTAs is clearly placed to influence the Oscars, and the best films, only Les Miserables, which is unlikely to win, I fear, is British, but some are too close to call. Best film, best director,
I'd throw
best
in Life of Pi,
and best supporting actor, too close to call.
Don't get me started on Les Miserables, because clearly, Grace, you're a Les Miserables fan, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm a massive fan. I was a bit disappointed by the film, just because Russell Crowe was kind of awful, in my opinion.
Just as well,
yeah, but didn't you find there was a lot to admire in the rest of it?
Oh, yeah. But I'm a big fan of the musical, so I was a bit
Steady
like...
Grace, if Richard gets off on Les Miserables, he'll be on for the next two hours, consistently.
I would say it's likely to be outstanding British film, but as for which is going to be the best film, because remember, always forget the numbers of nominations. In fact, Lincoln's got 10, and Life of Pi, and Les Mis have got 9, and Skyfall, and not to its box office superlative success there, the most successful movie ever. I mean, it's got 8. That isn't the point. The point is, who will win in the top categories? The best film, although it's probably going to be Lincoln. We don't know. Argo, Zero Dark Thirty, and could be. And, of course, the best director, you could have Michael Haneke winning for Amour. There's a tough movie.
We've just been contacted by La Tuxta herself, Natalie Tuck, of course, up in Leeds now, doing her master's degree with Correct I Have My Views. Tempted to go to London as The Streep will be attending. There we are. She's seen Zero Dark Thirty, and Jessica Chastain is her firm favourite for Best Actress for the Oscars, and presumably will be up for the BAFTAs as well.
Oh, so, indeed, so. And I think one of the fascinating aspects of the Best Actress, it could conceivably go to Emmanuelle Reber for Amour. I mean, she was nominated for a BAFTA, incidentally, in the 1960s for Hiroshima Mon Amour, so she is amazing. But I suspect the battle will be between Jessica Chastain, who I think will win as the obsessed Agent Meyer tracking down Osama bin Laden in Zero Dark Thirty, versus Jennifer Lawrence as an angst-ridden sex addict in Silver Linings Playbook. Jennifer Lawrence's time will come. Helen Mirren in Hitchcock is good, and Marion Cotillard in Rustin Bone is extremely good, but I think it will be a Chastain-Lawrence battle, with Chastain winning. No doubt of that. But
I still think Celebrity Smackdown, bit of wrestling, bit of Jello, be the next little thing.
And Anne Hathaway, by the way, no question she'll win the doomed Fantine, I Dreamed a Dream. I mean, that is brilliant for Best Supporting Actress. But what about Best Supporting Actor? It could go anyway, and Philip Seymour Hoffman as the leader of a bizarre cult in The Master versus Tommy Lee Jones as a radical congressman in Lincoln. You absolutely wafer thin. In fact, Christoph Waltz's Django Unchained, very good as Dr. King Schultz. He speaks Tarantese with such aplomb. Or Alan Arkin for Argo. You see, a split vote could let anyone in.
I can say, I mean, it's almost as I say, OMG, OBG. Quite literally, Oscars, BAFTAs, Globes, OMG.
Great surprise, by the way, with the Oscars, BAFTAs, and Globes. And I noticed it here, and that is not the two absentees in the Best Director category, which could give us an idea, not necessarily, but could give us an idea of who's going to win, because Tom Hooper, in none of the top awards, got a nomination for Best Director for Les Miserables.
Well,
and Spielberg isn't nominated for Lincoln. I mean, that is extraordinary.
I can tell you're shocked, but don't worry about it. You know, Stephen will be able to cope, I'm sure. You know,
he's coming, but as for coping, is he going to win? You see, this is why it's so exciting.
It's so exciting. I'm going to ask Stephanie to ask you those last two questions. Stephanie, go.
Have you had an interesting call with us today?
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And who thought we'd be discussing Richard III a few months ago?
Glad to hear it. Would we be able to have a conversation with you again?
Absolutely, post-BAFTA, and also we must review a couple of the latest movies too.
We may well speak actually about doing another pre-BAFTA thing, because I think we need to do another piece of that, but we'll talk about that off-air and all sorts of other bits. Ian Lennox is up next, journalist, producer, writer, top soul.